everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 192. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 5, Episode 3, The Replacement, and Angel, Season 2, Episode 3, First Impressions. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on hypeable.com, or you can find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. Today I'm joined by superfan and special guest Deidre and newbies Brittany and Ariana. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
So I'm going to kick off the fun fact because, fun fact, Deidre's my best friend and Aww. She's on this podcast and I'm so excited.
As you can tell on her voice.
Yes. Can you hear the smile in my voice? I'm a weirdo. I'm sorry. Deidre, do you have a fun fact for us today?
Well, I guess I'm changing my fun fact. Okay. My cat is being very sporadic right now.
What's he doing? His name is Milo. He's adorable. He has his own Instagram, FYI. Milo Paxton, NYC. Go follow him.
No, he's just, I don't know, he's very hyper right now and just wanting to run everywhere and jump all over.
Mitch's cats are ridiculous when he podcasts.
They play with bells. They're very noisy.
Okay, cool. I miss Milo. I'm going to see him in like a week, so that's exciting. And Brittany, what's your fun fact?
Oh, my fun fact is I didn't know we were recording until about 16 minutes after the recording time.
I was like, is everything okay? She's like, yeah, I'll get that post that you told me about like later today. And I'm like, what about the podcast?
I'm like, I'm really confused as to why Karen's following up about a girl's trailer at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then she's like, no, how about Rewatchable? Here I am, guys. Don't worry.
You were so blasé about being late. And I was like, clearly something is wrong. Because Brittany freaks out when she's like 2 minutes late. So
clearly, I thought this podcast was recording on Sunday.
It happens. Ariana, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that everyone has probably forgotten about me because I haven't been on in like over a month. But so I haven't gotten to talk about the Angel finale, which I'm obsessed with and watched like 5 times because when I'm sad, it makes me happy to watch Angel be sad over his friends. So I decided to do like a little experiment where I go back and watch like the first few seasons of Buffy, but only the scenes with Angel and Cordelia in them. And if you do that, it's like a whole nother story where like Buffy is not the protagonist. She's like this mean girl who keeps trying to separate Cordelia and Angel's like budding, like frenemy romance. So
I want to do that mainly because I think I'd like Angel more because I have like who Angel's supposed to be now in my head. And then to watch him like try and shove that beautiful, innocent man down because he's with Buffy. It's just going to be amazing.
That dumpster scene. I'm so proud of myself for calling it. But the dumpster scene still holds up, guys.
It's good to know. That's great. I would never forget about you, Ariana. Actually, I was just wondering about, I was like, she hasn't been on in a while. I don't know if she's been really busy or if, like, the scheduling just hasn't worked out with everyone else. But I'm glad you were like, no, I must be on this week or else I will disappear into the ether. So. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Of course.
Okay, let's jump into the episode. First off is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 503, The Replacement. In this episode, a demon after Buffy accidentally splits Xander into two Xanders. The better Xander is proactive. He manages to get a promotion and a new apartment. However, the loser Xander flops around and thinks that his better half is trying to kill him. Willow meshes the two halves together, but not before Anya asks for a threesome with her two boyfriends. Yeah.
In this episode, I think it was like the first time where I really saw like the Natalie come out of her.
Wait. Because she was asking for a threesome?
I don't know what it was. I think it was when she, like, threw the fit in the apartment. But she was, like, sad. Like, just when she was doing that, I was like, I can't see how people would say this is sort of like Natalie. Like, not in a bad way. I love Anya. She's, like, my favorite. But I always thought that she was, like, too weird. And Natalie isn't that weird. But Natalie says everyone says she's like her. But I can see the...
Yeah.
The resemblance now.
Deidre, you've met Natalie.
I don't know. I guess I don't know Natalie well enough to... Because, like, I love Anya. And I don't know. I don't see that many similarities.
I don't see it because I don't like Anya and I love Natalie.
We've got the whole spectrum here. That's interesting. So yeah, this is yet another Xander-centric episode. Obviously we've gotten them before, like Inca Mummy Girl and the Zeppo. How are we feeling about yet another Xander-centric episode? Deidre, let's start with you. I'm going to throw it to you a lot because you haven't been on before and we don't actually talk about Buffy and Angel that much. Like, okay, so background story. I think I made you start listening, didn't I, to Rewatchable? I was like...
You were begging me to watch or to listen to some kind of podcast, and it's the only thing that I'd be more interested in. That's why I watch or used to watch.
Not Deidre's cup of tea, except for Buffy and Angel, so that's great. So yeah, she listens to all of them, and then we're looking for another super fan to take a permanent spot, and I was like, well, until we figure out like what exactly is going on, then we're just going to kind of do some guest hosts. And she was like, me, I'll guest host. And I was like, that would actually be really cool. So
yeah, how exciting. We can get an outsider's perspective. You can tell us all
the
things.
And all the dirt on me. Don't tell them.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, it's a little weird being on this because I'm so used to just listening. And so now I have to actually take part in conversation. So it's kind of like hard for me to, I don't know, to talk, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like it should be easy for you, because then when you listen, don't you ever get the urge to, like, scream and yell at us, to, like, tell us we're wrong?
No, not that at all. I guess more, I'm just more excited to, like, I'd want to voice my opinion, sort of, in some parts.
Yeah. We get a lot of listeners who are like, I talk out loud to you guys when we listen, or when I listen to the episode, so I'd feel like it would be easier being on here rather than just, like you'd be able to talk, but... Maybe you don't talk out loud to the podcast.
Well, I'm usually on the train listening or something. True. I'm not going to talk out loud.
That'd be weird.
Most people in New York do that. It's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what do you think about another Xander-centric episode, Deej?
I really like it because he doesn't really get enough of attention, and I always used to like him. I guess I'm a little... I do like him still, but he is a little... weird to me now, but I do like his quirkiness and just, I don't know, this part was actually probably one of my favorite Xander ones.
Yeah, we definitely saw a different side to him. So, newbies, Ariana, what do you think of this one?
I really enjoyed this episode. Like I've said, I've definitely hated on Xander in the past, but I've been very honest in his progression, and I feel like he's redeemed himself a lot, starting with, like, the fourth season, especially, like, with Anya. I feel like she's helped redeem him because he, like, treats her well and stuff, and he's way less weird to Buffy now. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was really funny.
Cool. Brittany?
I don't know. I wish he got another plot line. Like, I don't mind a Xander-centric episode. That I loved the Zeppo, but this felt very much like the Zeppo, where we're still getting that plot line of, we don't know what to do with Xander, so we'll throw him a bone every couple seasons and just give him an episode where he feels left out. And I don't know, I felt really bad for him again, which was, it's hard to just watch him go through this all the time.
It is really annoying how they keep doing that to him, like, being like, oh, he's the useless one, because I feel like he hasn't been in a while. He's proven that he's pretty useful to the group.
Yeah.
I don't know why he doesn't feel that way. Yeah, why doesn't make himself feel more useful?
Yeah, I think this episode did a good job, though, at the end of, like, showing him, like, no, this person is you. It's not, like, someone else coming to, like, that person is always there. And so that was refreshing. Like, by the time we got to the end of it, I was like, oh, this feels, I wish that was more of the whole episode, like, where the two Xanders are together and they're kind of joking around and he's realizing, like, oh, I do contribute and people do like me because of this other person that does exist inside me. Very Once Upon a Time, because right now we're dealing with a lot of split people on Once Upon a Time.
God, we are.
I saw this in the two Xanders and I'm like, oh no.
What are they? That didn't even occur to me. Why didn't that even occur to me?
I don't know. I don't know how you missed that.
Sorry. Yeah, this is really interesting, I think. And the Zeppo was... The thing with the Zeppo is that Xander was still that background character, and nobody really knew what was going on. It was sort of a lesson in not necessarily needing to be the person front and center, whereas this one was a wake-up call for Xander that, yes, he feels like he's a loser, and he feels useless, and, like, nobody needs him, but he sees that other side of him. He realizes that he has the potential to be the person he wants to be. And I guess we're just going to have to see if, like, this is a turning point for him or whether we're still going to get these repeated episodes of Xander feels useless, let's throw him a bone. What I caught on to was that this was yet another episode where there was this misidentification of a character. So we got it when Giles turned into a demon. We got it when Buffy and Faith switched bodies, and we're getting it yet again when we think that the other Xander is evil, but really it's still real Xander. And the scene in particular where Anya is, like, looking between the two and she can't necessarily decide, like, who's the real one, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I really liked that everyone was having a hard time being like, no, like, there wasn't any really defining characteristics where, like, even though that other Xander was cleaned up and put together, people, like, know that it just showed that people, like, recognize that that's a thing that Xander could do. So no one was really, like, thrown by this, like, otherworldly Xander being around because it was Xander. You know, it felt a little weird when he was in the construction office because that's where I think it was the biggest difference. But when he was with his friends, nothing really seemed off because, you know, people aren't always looking for ways to put Xander down. It just happens sometimes. Like, I don't think anyone's intentionally being like, oh, Xander, you're the worst. It's just like, in the moment, sometimes people are just like, oh, classic Xander, screwing everything up, even though he doesn't. All in his head.
But speaking of Anya, in the last episode, she was injured, and this, I think, really affects her in this episode in particular because she's sort of second-guessing her life and where it's going, and she feels very mortal in this episode, which led to a lot of hilarity, but I just wanted to know what you guys thought of the fact that they're addressing her humanity still, and that it's something she still struggles with.
I mean, it's true. It'd be weird if you were used to living forever and then all of a sudden you realized you're going to get old. I mean, I feel like, like, sometimes does it ever hit you? Like, wow, I'm going to be really old someday. That's going to be weird.
Right?
It's going to, like, hurt to walk and, like, hurt to sit down.
Okay,
let's hurt to get up.
I'm 80 years old.
I thought it was really funny at first, but then it's sort of like her life is now on a deadline because before she never had that. And so, like, when you're suddenly, like, have lived forever and ever, it's gonna hit you that you can die. And it made me actually, I know we're supposed to be focusing on the characters happening in Buffy, but my mind went to Angel when he doesn't want to be immortal anymore. And so, like, what is that gonna be like if he does eventually, you know, get his soul back and, you know, starts living a normal life and starts aging? And, you know, we had that funny conversation about him, like, wanting to join a gym and all this stuff, like, you know, and, like, what is that toll going to be like on him, even though it's something that he wants? This isn't something Anya wanted, but it is something that Angel wants. But yet, like, how does your mind change once you are
given like a clock that's like, okay, you're now it's counting down, like, and it never stops counting down.
I love that she has a checklist of things that she knows she's supposed to want.
Yeah. And she's like, okay, now when am I getting a car? Like, it was just very like, this is the timeline. And I feel like that's the timeline that we kind of all give ourselves in like high school, I guess. Cause you're like, okay, I go to college, I graduate, I get this, I get that, I get the job, I do this. And then it's sort of like, that doesn't happen as neatly as you want it to. But Anya still lives in that headspace.
I'm really, really curious as to, like, where she lives, where she gets, like, does she work? How does she pay rent? Like, what is she doing? Because she just kind of showed up there. And I guess we, like, never see her work or...
Or, like, where she was living. Like,
yeah, what is she doing?
I want to talk about the villain for this episode because even though this episode... Like, this episode was about Xander. It was less about the villain and more about Xander and the effects that Xander had, or that Toph had on Xander. So, Deidre, did you like the villain for this week? Did you feel like it was a credible threat to the group?
I don't think he was that powerful. Really, he just had the stick, and that's all he had. He didn't really, I don't think he was that scary or anything. He looked a little creepy, but...
He was cool. He glowed in the dark.
Yeah, but that's, like, totally what you would expect from, like, the time period, too, if you think about it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, he was more background than a lot of the other villains have been. So, it was... Definitely, they were taking their sights off of the villain and putting it more on Xander and the way that he fits into the group, which is also great because characterization and character growth and all of that, it was just a means to an end, and I think that was fine. But Brittany or Ariana, did you guys like, dislike, not care at all about Toph?
Well, I wanted to know more about him just because he was so cool looking. Like, it was like a character out of like a Goosebumps novel. Like, you know, he had like that crazy skull, and then, oh, but it creeps me out when he, like, smiled and his teeth, like, glue in the black light. That was awful. I was like, my only thought was, like, you need to go to the dentist because your teeth should probably not do that. Yeah, but I think it's interesting that he was one of the most, like, detailed villains we've seen on Buffy in a while, and yet he was just sort of like, he's around. Like, he was almost like comic relief at some points because, you know, we had, I know this is your favorite scene, but we had like that whole Giles interaction with him. And like, I didn't really get the point of him being there because I was more focused on the character stuff. But yeah, I think it was just a really interesting budgetary thing between like, we're going to spend this much money making him look cool, but we're not really going to use him. Like, I don't know why that's where my head goes, but that's where it went.
Yeah, no, actually, I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, that's why I asked, you know, if he felt like a background character, because they did kind of, when he's first introduced at the top of the episode, like, he gets the whole cauldron scene, he gets the whole, like, my pain will mean that I can take down the Slayer, and, like, going after the Slayer is, you know, a weekly occurrence, so that's not a huge deal, but it felt like they were building to something massive, and then really, like, he was so easy to defeat in the end, and he did look really cool, so I'm surprised that they didn't have him around more often. But either way, what ends up happening, obviously, Xander is split into two. How long did it take for you guys, you newbies, to realize that both Xanders were real?
I thought he was actually evil at first. I didn't really remember the episode before.
Yeah, me too.
I definitely thought he was evil.
Just because of the coin. I don't know. That was a little creepy.
Yeah,
and
the
then
coin.
He wanted to kill his other half or the other one so quick. I thought that was out of character for him.
He, like, had a weird cadence to him. But
he felt very different, right?
Yeah.
I think it revealed, like, that other side of Xander that we've been talking about where he just wants to get rid of the useless Xander. Like, as even when he's not split in two, he's like, why can't I just, like, stop being so useless? And so that part of him, even though
that's when I thought that there was this evil Xander walking around in retrospect. It's sort of like, oh no, that's something that Xander would totally want to do. Even if he wasn't evil, he wants to get rid of the half of him that's just not, he feels is not part of the group and providing anything. But I definitely thought that he was evil until they were like, no, 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 no. Like all of a sudden everyone knew everything about split bodies. So they were like, no, no, no. If you kill one, you kill both. Like, I was like, oh, all right. There's a lot. Did you guys write this episode of Once Upon a Time? Like, totally. I'm really starting to think between this episode and Angel, like, people are borrowing from their old careers in order to create American Horror Story Hotel Tim and to create this whole season of Once Upon a Time Jane. So I think that they're just, you know, they ran out of ideas and are starting to pick from their past career. Because that hotel in Angel looks so much like the hotel that they made in American Horror Story.
Maybe it's the same one.
It could be. It just felt very similar.
Is it a real hotel, Karen, or is it it's probably a set? I'm sure it's a set.
Yeah, I do not know the answer to this question.
I'm sure it's a set. It would be hard, right, to like film in a hotel every episode.
Unless it was abandoned, but yeah. Going back to Xander really quick, I think that it's really interesting that these two Xanders are both real, and yet we see the loser Xander all the time. And I think that's kind of the point. Like, Xander didn't realize that this other person was in him, but the fact that the other Xander feels so foreign to us, and that's why we thought he was evil, just says a lot about how they've treated this character up until this point. And again, like, we'll have to see if that changes moving forward.
I like that for Anya, no red flags went up, because I do feel like Anya, that's how she sees Xander. Like she does kind of put him on a pedestal as, like, the perfect boyfriend, because she chose him. So I liked that she, she related to that character, or that side of him.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Again, I just really liked when she was looking between the two of them, and she was like, I don't know what to do. But then she was like, get rid of him to the other one, which was really sad, but then it all worked out in the end. Kind of. She didn't get her threesome, but, you know. It happens. Switching gears, Dawn does show up in this episode, but she's definitely in the background. So, Brittany, what are you thinking so far about Dawn and the fact that we're not getting answers straight away?
Well, I've sort of just accepted this fate that I have to deal with Michelle Trachtenberg for the next three seasons of my life. I don't like her in anything. So her being around and being this super annoying brat is really, it's
why
testing
is that the
me.
Only thing she plays? Why is, I know. She a brat in everything?
I know. I feel like that's all she can do, which is unfortunate. But, I think it's a really interesting tactic that they're using with her. Like, oh no, we're just going to have her show up and we're not going to give you any answers whatsoever. I'm like, all right, that's interesting. Cause I guess if I had answers, I'd be like, oh, that was cheap. And they just did, although that could still come. It is Buffy, but I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of hers right now. The less that she's involved with this gang, the better. And we'll see. I think it's interesting. The most interesting thing to me, because I haven't been on since the season 4 finale, I guess, or maybe even before that, is that she knows everything. Like, clearly she has to have been around for some time, because she's like, yeah. She had that whole episode where she did the voiceover, which, oh my God. Whew, I'm glad I didn't have to talk about that episode. But she, like, knows a lot that's going on, and yet Buffy's still, like, you know, keeping her out of her life and, you know, not letting her see dead bodies and stuff. Like, that's a cool older sister move. But at the same time, it's like, she knows a lot of stuff. And so it's like, yeah, my sister's a slayer and all this stuff. I'm like, it just leaves me with so many questions. And I guess it's a way to get me to keep caring that she's around, because I want answers.
but I'm also kind of thrilled that they're not giving them because it's something new and different.
Ariana, what about you?
I actually knew kind of about Dawn. Well, obviously Netflix has freaking Michelle Trachtenberg on the cover.
Yeah.
But I remember like one time turning on the TV and I just have this image of Michelle Trachtenberg. She's at in high school and they mentioned something about her being Buffy's sister. I had always assumed that she would come in as Buffy's stepsister from her dad. So like, just like a normal thing.
Right.
Yeah, I knew that
because
she...
I thought she was going to be like, you know how they always bring in the cousin, like in the later seasons, like when the kids grow up so that they can have like another connection, someone younger and cuter or whatever. I thought that's what she was going to be.
Or like half sister a la Charmed when things go sideways.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh yeah, she's been here all along, which they are doing. Like, oh yeah, she's always been here. But I kind of agree. So maybe because I watch Flash, I feel like it's been a flashpoint. Someone messed with the timeline. And now she's appeared out of nowhere. And probably when they figure out someone has messed with the timeline, it's going to be like, Dr. Stein being like, well, should I get rid of her? Should I fix the timeline? But then she's going to be like, oh, but then I'll have to get rid of my sister. That can't happen because now I love her. And so we're going to have to stick with the new timeline. So what? I don't know.
Deej, do you remember what you thought about Dawn when you first saw this?
I don't even remember her coming in. I don't even remember her later.
Really?
Yeah, and then when she came on, I was like, oh, yeah.
Maybe you just, like, cut her from your mind because you hate
probably.
Her.
Probably. I probably focused on everyone else, though, instead.
Yeah,
like, the development of other relationships and everything mm-hmm. else.
What do you think about the way that Buffy has been treating Dawn, and do you think Buffy's personality has changed, or do you think that it's just like a new dynamic since Dawn's been introduced? We talked about this a little bit on last week, but I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, I have strong feelings on this because number one, I hate Dawn, but it does make sense that she was supposed to be 12. That is a little bit more helpful. But just that first scene when we're introduced to her and she like does that makes that noise or whatever, so Buffy falls. I was just like, Dawn, you're terrible. Why would you do that? What, your sister's doing something dangerous. Why would you do that? And so to me, that just goes way beyond annoying little sister into like potentially harmful. Like you're being purposefully harmful, which is not cool. And also, it really made me appreciate my little sister who would never do that. But I thought it was really interesting because Buffy, someone mentioned in our tweets, that I used to comment, Buffy's such an only child, but like the annoying kind, the one who feels like the whole world has to revolve around them. But I feel like if Buffy had grown up with a sister or in this timeline where she's always had a little sister, I feel like that would make her inherently different. You grow up differently when you feel like you have to be responsible for someone else, which obviously her mom has clearly done that, made her feel like she has to be responsible for Dawn. So I was more endeared to her that episode because she was always feeling like she had to take care of Dawn, and Dawn was not helpful at all.
Yeah. Deidre, as the youngest sibling in your family, do you relate to Dawn at all, or do you still think she's a brat?
She is a brat, but I don't think I was ever that bad.
I was
no,
not.
I feel like nobody is that bad. I can't think of anybody I know who would do that to their older sibling.
I feel like for me it was always the opposite. They were always doing stuff to me.
That's fair.
For like most of my life before my dad got remarried, so for like 10 years, I was the oldest. And I had a little brother, and I still have a little brother. But, you know, then I became, like, squarely in the middle. And so it's, like, I get the – she still behaves like an only child. Like, I saw that tweet as well. And I'm like, yeah, but her behavior hasn't really changed just because she has a younger sister. In fact, it's become, like, a little bit worse. Like, those scenes when she is in the kitchen and, you know, is – that whole like play between like them like making breakfast, it felt very unnatural, because I think that Buffy still like walked into that room like she was the only person there, and like they still ignore her, like they still ignore Dawn. So it's like, where did she come from? Like, I don't understand.
It's just like the instinct is just in her. She's like, narcissism is just embedded in her system.
Like, this hasn't changed her at all. Like, if anything, Buffy's just gotten a little bit more annoying, because like, now you have to stage those scenes where she's like, get out of my room. And like, you're in college and you shouldn't be behaving like this anymore. Like, you should have had that whole thing when you were like 14, 15 and she was like 7, you know, like that's not, this behavior doesn't look good on you, Buffy.
And especially considering the show tackles, like, the apocalypse and demons trying to kill her family, the dynamic between the two seems so petty and immature and unimportant.
It seems really bizarre because, like, for example, that's kind of how I fight with my brother, who's two, or not anymore, but, like, when we were younger, because we're 2 years apart, but my sister and I are, like, 6 to 7 years apart, and our fights were much different. Like, when I was in college and she was in high school, we didn't fight like that. Like scream like, oh, get out of my room. I don't know. It seems bizarre.
Well, as an only child, I cannot relate to this.
Yeah, you can. With me, sometimes when we were in college or high That's school true. Or whatever.
That is total. Oh, I was the annoying little sister, wasn't I?
You purposely did stuff to annoy me.
Deidre, I told you you're not allowed to share any dirt on me.
Sorry, it actually worked.
It did work. Actually, that's relatable. So, okay. I'm going to come to Dawn's defense a little bit, because I'm not saying I was ever that bad or annoying, and of course, like, messing up her Slayer training, I feel like that is untouchable, because that's something Buffy needs to become a better Slayer, to, like, keep everybody alive, so, like, don't interrupt that. But purposely pushing people's buttons just to annoy them and see their reaction, I can kind of relate to that. I love you, Deidre.
Love you, too.
Okay, so final point for this episode is Riley and Buffy's relationship. Riley says he knows Buffy isn't really in love with him, even though he is completely in love with Buffy and he thinks that she's the one. So,
yes, I was so excited. I was like, yes, they're writing him out. They're going to write him out.
I wasn't only like, I thought that too. I was like, oh good, we're finally getting rid of like Riley. But then also I was like, I actually had to pause it and like rewind it. And I was like, did he just drop this like truth bomb in the last 5 seconds of Buffy? Because normally it's like something funny cut to black with Xander. And then this happened, and I was like, whoa, hold on a second. Is this really happening? Like, I had to get confirmation that Riley actually said that. And I thought it was such a good line. I was so thrilled, because maybe it means we're getting rid of Riley, which would be exciting. And also, it'll complicate things in Buffy's perfect little bubble of getting a massage and watching movies and being happy all the time. Gosh, make it end.
I agree Riley. With you, Brittany.
Oh, that's new for this podcast. Can we keep Deidre?
We can. Yeah, I also really liked the way that he just dropped this. And like, the thing is, he wasn't whining. He wasn't sad. He was resigned. And I think that was like a very mature reaction. And I especially love the way that they brought in Buffy and they kissed and like Riley was acting like it's all normal. It's not something he's unsure about. He knows. He absolutely knows that Buffy is not in love with him in the same way that he is in love with her, and yet he's just taking advantage of the time that they have together. I think, like, putting aside your feelings for Riley and their relationship and how they act on screen, I just really loved that moment.
Yeah, it was, I feel like it was one of his better moments. I feel like it was very self-aware. Riley is like that guy where if my friend in real life was dating him, I would love him. And I'd be like, yes, please never get rid of him. He treats you well. He's a nice guy. Just like lock him down. But on the show, obviously, because we have such colorful characters, he is bringing nothing to the table. And, but I feel like I agree with him. I don't think she loves him because I feel like Buffy associates love with like pain and like the more it hurts, the more it's real. So.
Yeah, there's nothing tearing them apart or actively working against them. And so that's going to get as stale for Buffy as he's been for us this entire time he's been around. So hopefully they'll break up and, you know, she'll go with who I want her to be with, which is going to be exciting. And then, you know, watching Riley, like, say that at the end, it made like the rest of the beginning of this season sort of like click into place. Like we were talking about with Anya, you know, suddenly feeling her mortality and wanting to get everything like squeezed in as quickly as possible. He's trying to do that with Buffy, but he can tell like he doesn't really fit in anywhere, sort of like Xander. Like when he makes that joke, like, oh, well, what will we do once we, I don't even know what episode this was. It could have not even been this episode. Where he's sitting on the stairs at Giles's and he's like, well, I would capture him and study him and do all this and provide, like, go do experiments on him. And everyone, like, no one laughs at him. Like, I was like, oh, yeah.
That was this episode.
Okay. I was like, yeah, you really don't fit in here, buddy.
Also, considering he's coming from the Initiative, like, they're yeah. Like, red flag, red flag. Yeah. It's interesting. And again, just really loved that moment because of his self-awareness, and I think it just adds some dimension to him finally, so we'll have to see where it goes.
What did you guys think of Xander's look on his face when he said that?
I thought it was the best acting that Xander has done on this show.
But right, like, the way the camera stayed on Xander.
Yeah, because you know that, like, that would mean so much to Xander, not just because I don't think because of like his feelings for Buffy as like romantic feelings, but as just like he pictures them as being like the ideal. Like when you see them, they're having like that couples movie night and he's watching them and he's like, that is what I need to have with Anya. Like that's perfection. That's the perfect relationship. And then to hear that, it's like, oh, it's not. It's not perfect, and it's not. It's all one-sided. So I thought he was the perfect person to tell.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting that you just said the one-sided thing, because I noticed in this episode, remember how he goes to Willow first, and then, like, he doesn't think until the end of Anya. And Willow's like, I feel like that's bad, that you're only barely thinking of her. Because I can feel like maybe it's the same way between him and Anya. Like, I feel like Anya loves him so much, probably because she's a new human and she's feeling all these things all at once and she's attached them all to Xander. Like, that's where all of her chips are on Xander. And I feel like he feels like he's supposed to like her because she likes him so much, but maybe he doesn't.
Do you feel like that's what his look was, that he realizes?
Oh, I don't know. I honestly didn't pay attention to his look because I knew the episode was over.
And you were, like, looking for the way to get back to Angel as quickly as possible.
But that was just something, because you said the one-sided thing, that's what clicked in my brain.
Yeah, I don't think his look was in reaction to examining his own relationship. I think it was more like he's realizing, like, everything in his head is like, you know, it's like one of those beautiful mind scenes where all the math is like, you know, circling around his head. And he's just like, oh, relationships aren't perfect just because they look perfect. And it's going to take him a while to get to examining his and Anya's relationship. We can't give Xander too much credit because he can't get there that quickly. So eventually I think he'll realize like maybe something's not right with him and Anya. But for now, I think it's just that, like, glass-shattering moment where he realizes, oh, they're not perfect, and I should stop idealizing them.
Yeah, which is pretty good for Xander.
Yeah, that was a lot for him to handle in 20 seconds.
All right, so moving into our favorite scenes now, I just have to say that mine was when Giles attacks Toph with the statue of the fertility goddess, but also when he, like, acts it out again later, telling the group about it. It was so cute.
He was so happy.
He was. He was very proud of himself. But then they were like, so what happened? You ran away? And Giles was like, not really. Deidre, what was your favorite scene?
I guess this would be when Anya was in the basement while they were packing all of Xander's things, taking it out, that she was doing absolutely nothing.
Just reading a magazine. Very Anya. And Brittany?
Mine was when Spike was attacking like that mannequin that he set up of Buffy, because I like that we haven't spent a lot of time with Spike lately, but we get these little glimpses of him just like getting really, really super angry at Buffy again and sort of like renewing his faith in killing the Slayer and just making it his life's mission to make her life miserable. And I'm like really glad that he's doing that, because I started to feel like, and I, you know, this could be true, but that he's going to go over to Angel soon, because we haven't been spending a lot of time with him. And since he can only kill demons, like, he might actually just be more useful on Angel right now than he is here. And so just seeing him like get all like revved up and like kick the mannequin over and stuff. Plus I watched last weekend two seasons of The Fall, and one of the creepy serial killer things that Jamie Dornan does is like create mannequins and like pose them in weird positions. So I was like, oh no, this is taking a turn that I don't need to see, but it's fine. He just wanted to attack Buffy.
I love how obsessed he is with her. Like, I just think it's so funny. Like, he's just transferred all of his anger at life, and like, she didn't even do this to him. This was the initiative. She's been helping him out.
He is with her, I think, and that's like, you know.
And oh. She hasn't slain him yet, so, like, he should be thankful.
I know, but instead he's just, like, decided to become, like, a weirdo obsessed.
Yeah. It's so great.
Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Xander trying to convince Willow that he's him and all of their secret, like, things and the Snoopy dance and things like that.
The Snoopy dance is really cute.
Dance that was so really funny. The Snoopy dance is something that, like, my friends and I do, which is funny.
Really?
Yeah, and I've never seen it, obviously, on Buffy before.
I'm gonna need you to do the Snoopy dance next time I see
you. I do the Charlie Brown one more. That's the one where he, like, waves his arms back and forth looks down.
I like the guy who, like, uses his shoulders, like, and, like, just turns from side to side.
Yes!
This is amazing. I feel like we should do a compilation video now of all of us doing this dance. And like,
definitely.
For the 200th. To Rewatchable.
Episode 200. It'll be
That's not that far away either, which is terrible.
I know. I feel like we just celebrated 150. What am I doing with my life? Like, all I do is this podcast.
When you can remember.
When I can remember to actually show up.
Sorry, I just had to. Brittany is usually very on time and gets annoyed when, like, the rest of us are late. So, like, I just had to throw that in there because it never happens.
Aww.
But it's cool. All right, favorite lines now. Mine was just kind of a throwaway line, but it's when Riley and everybody are at the dump and Riley says, people say they're recycling. They're not recycling. I just love how angry he was about it. Oh, it was so funny. Deidre, what was your favorite line?
Well, mine was when Anya and Xander were talking. The confident one. When Anya says, what happens next in our lives? When do we get a car? In a boat? No, I don't mean a boat. I mean a puppy. Or a child. I have a list somewhere.
I feel like everybody really liked this line. This scene. The fact that she has a list.
Yeah.
Although, Anya with a child.
I feel like she would be a okay mom. I feel like she would be okay. Yeah. Because she's very, like, protective of her own. Like, she is pretty good to Xander. Like, she snaps at him and stuff. But she, like, if it was in a real, like, thing where it was, like, them or us, she would take care of Xander. So I feel like she would be okay. She would treat the baby well. She'd make sure she had the best baby. The baby had everything it wanted.
It would certainly lead to hilarity. Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Mine was between Anya and the Xanders when she says, what do we do if this doesn't work? And both Xanders say, kill us both, Spock. And it just made me laugh because that's one of my favorite Star Trek episodes when there's good Kirk and evil Kirk. So, and that's the Xander I would want to hang out with if, like, he was on with that level of geekiness all the time. I'd be like, all right, we could be best friends.
I love how proud he looked of himself.
Yeah.
When that happened. Ariana?
Mine was when Xander was trying to think of something to tell Willow that would make her believe him, and he said, on my 7th birthday, I wanted a toy fire truck, and I didn't get it, and you were real nice about it, and then the house next door burned down, and then real fire trucks came, and for years I thought you set the fire for me. If you did, you can tell me.
So cute. It's easy, I think, to forget sometimes how long Xander and Willow have known each other, because their relationship in high school was very close, but right now they're sort of in two different parts of their lives and obviously two different physical locations. And it's moments like these that I really enjoy because it just reminds you the history they have between each other as friends and, you know, what they mean to each other, even if we don't explore it all the time. So hopefully we get more of that. Okay, let's jump into Angel. And actually, before we do this, Deidre, I'm curious, overall, which do you like more, Buffy or Angel?
Buffy. Buffy.
Okay, cool. I think we might be split down the middle.
What makes you think that? Why don't you like Buffy more?
I don't know. I think Ariana and Brittany maybe like Angel a bit more.
Oh, I have a great David Boreanaz story. So I was out last night and their, like, Bones was on and it was off mute for some reason at this bar. And I was just, like, infatuated by it. Like, I could not look away. And my friend is like, why? Like, she was talking to me and I was just ignoring her. And she was like, why are you so, do you like this episode of Bones? I go, I've never seen Bones. And she's like, why are you so invested in this episode of Bones? I'm like, Angel, look at him. He's so grown up. But yet he looks exactly the same. I was like so thrown. I could not look away. So that is what my life has become. I can't even socialize without watching something because it's related to Angel.
Kristen, but I think, often rewatches Bones, and so it'll just randomly be on in the apartment and I'll just stop and stare. Like, I'm not, like, Bones is actually a pretty good show, but, like, I haven't really seen a full episode. But I'll just stand there and be like, that's Angel. That's Angel all grown up.
Yeah, and I went to a Fox event, like, a Fox Upfronts a few years ago, and he was there. And I went through my pictures, because I, like, took a ton of pictures when I was there. And I'm like, oh my god, like, he looks so good in person. But I didn't care, because it was for Bones, and I'm like, I don't know what Bones is. Maybe I'll post a picture. Because he is a real vampire. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Angel now, episode 203, First Impressions. In this episode, Cordy has a vision that Gunn is in trouble, so she follows him around, pestering him for a bit. A tall, floppy demon named D-Vax stole Angel's car, so Cordy enlists Gunn to help get it back. Meanwhile, Angel has wet dreams about Darla and feels extraordinarily comfortable being naked for Wesley. Deidre, I know you mentioned before we actually started that you didn't particularly like this episode.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why. I know I liked the episode before this the most, but I don't know. I guess I just, like, there was good parts, but I just felt like there wasn't a lot of, like, good quotes to really come off of, and I don't know, maybe later on I'll be able to explain it more.
Yeah, as we get talking sometimes that, like, triggers things to figure out, like, well, yeah, I didn't like this part. Newbies, what did you think?
I liked this episode more than last week's, even though I know I'm not supposed to, because last week's was apparently, like, the best episode ever and Joss Whedon's favorite episode, and he's so proud of it. I like it on Angel when they're funny, and this episode they were funny, so I like it.
Brittany? I definitely liked last week's better, but definitely really liked all of the Darla stuff, and I'm not a huge Darla fan, but I think it's really interesting how, like, Angel is, like, wanting to go to sleep because he, like, wants to envision Darla, but I also at the same time want to send him to, like, a retreat in, like, obviously not the desert because he's a vampire, but maybe, like, Alaska, where, like, he can, like, get help for this, like, blonde girl obsession, because it's, like, it's so weird how obsessed he is with them. And, like, there are great moments in his, like, dreamscapes where, like, he's on the beach or, you know, they're just hanging out. And I really liked all of that component to this episode. I also just liked Cordy and Gunn interacting a bit. And I was looking at the transcript because I wanted to grab, like, a line for, like, word for word for this. And I read ahead, like, I was watching the episode, but I read the rest of the episode before it happened. And I have to say that I read the final interaction between Cordy and Gunn, and I was like, oh, that's definitely going to be my favorite scene. I just can feel it. But the way it was acted, I was like, oh, I didn't like it at all. And it was so disappointing. So I'm never going to read the transcript before I watch the episode, because I just thought that exchange would have more heart behind it. And
I agree.
It just really didn't. And I was so looking forward to it, because I'm like, oh, good. I'm really excited that I read this and I know it's going to happen and it's going to be great. And it just felt very flat and just not, I don't know. It was a little disappointing.
Why would you read the transcript before you watch the episode?
Because I can't help myself.
Brittany.
Well, no, I was reading it while watching the episode. So, like, I was only, like, maybe 3 minutes ahead of myself. But yeah, it's sort of like, you know, when you can't look away from the, like, the Netflix, like, you know, when it's loading.
Yeah.
Sure.
When you're reading a book and, like, you kind of skip ahead, like, you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you're like, eh. Yeah.
I do that all the time. It's awful.
Can we talk about that? Because I do kind of agree. Sorry. I feel like that's probably at the bottom of this list. But when I watched it, I felt the same way, that I felt like it was supposed to be hitting us harder, but something about their way, it felt very stern, like not warm at all.
Yeah. Do you think that's from Cordelia? Because Cordelia, the way that she says it matter-of-factly, felt more like a teacher or a guru rather than somebody who's, like, genuinely invested. Like, I think she's genuinely invested, but it didn't necessarily come off that way. Or do you think it's Gunn having trouble accepting that friendship and not really saying thank you?
Unfortunately, I do feel like it's Cordelia, as much as I love her. I thought that she was too, like, well, you're broken and you need fixing and we're gonna fix you. And versus realizing that all of this hurt, like, is stemming from his sister, which was brought up today again, and the fact that he had to kill her, and that's why he's so, like, blocked off right now.
Yeah. I'm actually really curious for you guys to talk about Gunn for a little bit, because I know neither of you have been on that much, and we've gotten quite a bit from Gunn since he was first introduced. Ariana, do you like his addition to the show?
I do like him. He does feel a little bit like, what's his name? Who died season one? That guy. Doyle? Like how Doyle is very normal and Cordy and Wes are so weird. And I feel like they fit in better with Angel's world. Sometimes I feel like that with Gunn, like he's too normal and I would like him to be a little weirder. But yeah, I do like him. I see potential for him. And I wish that Cordelia hadn't been so patronizing about the fact that he needs saving.
I like him. I wish that they could find more for him to do than just, like, knowing where the, like, robberies happen and all the street gang stuff. Like, I feel like his reactions to things aren't, like, when he's, like, training and stuff like that, he is very closed off, especially to Cordy. He's like, you came into my place. And, like, but he does, like, care about her because he's like, I'll take you to find the car. And he's very, like, he's trying, I think, at some point, sort of like what Ariana was saying, like, with his sister, trying to still fill that older brother type role. Like, he's mad that Cordelia barged in and, like, broke up something and, you know, hit his friend in the head with an axe. But then he's also still like, I'll take you to get your car and make sure you get home okay and all that, you know, jazz. But I'm looking forward to him becoming more of a member of the group, and I hope it's more like, and I want to say like organically done instead of just like him playing the role of, oh, I can take you to any gang member you want in this scene. You know,
like, it's like all he's done in these episodes. Yeah.
So that's more of what I want from him.
Oh, I know that. I know that. Yeah. I can take you.
I will say though, I do really enjoy that he's bringing that dynamic to the show, because sometimes it feels like Cordelia, Wesley, and Angel, less so with Angel, because Angel has his own contacts and he knows the city fairly well. I feel like they are sort of invested in the big picture, which is not a bad thing. Whereas Gunn is invested in people and his neighborhood. And I really appreciate that he reminds us and reminds the team that there are people out there, like, you can save their lives, but that doesn't mean the quality of their lives are going up. And the fact that he points that out, and he points out some of the issues of, you know, the people living in LA and everything and the struggles that they have, is a good dynamic to the show, something that we didn't get in season one until the very end. So I really enjoy watching that play out in season two now.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought about how he's the only one who was raised in LA, and likely, I mean, of all of them, he's probably the only one who has friends or definitely
each other.
Yeah, that aren't each other. Or I don't know if he has family anymore since his sister's dead, but he has friends and a community that he belongs to, which would be interesting to maybe sometimes bring them into that community, or for him to have roots, separate loyalties, right? Like conflicting loyalties and stuff that the others don't have.
Deidre, I don't know about you. I have trouble sometimes talking about the characters, like, obviously knowing where they're going and trying not to have spoilers and stuff, but I will say, like, I like Gunn, and I'm excited for everybody to see what comes next for him. Up until this point, you know, how are you feeling about Gunn, and do you like his new dynamic? Because we finally have, like, a fourth person for the team.
Well, my problem is I didn't ever really watch much of Angel before.
Oh. Okay.
So I don't actually know a ton about him. I did recognize him. So I think a lot of times I used to just watch Angel if it was on.
Yeah.
And I would just kind of skip through, and I liked each episode, but I didn't really know what was happening. But I actually think Gunn and Angel are very similar, that they both like to brute in their own way. And yeah, they do like to help each other or help out people, but I feel like they both have their own way of getting intel that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And get things out of people, probably similar too.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't really thought about that before, but they do parallel each other in a lot of ways, which is interesting because we see that there's a little bit of friction between them in this episode, and yet, you know, they kind of are not the same person, obviously, because they both have vastly different experiences in life, but they kind of attack things in a similar way. There's a note in this doc that just says, who drives a vintage convertible with the top down in the middle of the night around downtown LA anyway?
An awesome vampire who can only go out at night. Like, he can't take advantage of the top down in the daytime, so why wouldn't he use it at night? Come on, guys. Probably Mitch. Sorry, Mitch, but it makes perfect sense. I don't know why this was a question.
Although Cordelia leaving those keys in the car.
Oh, Cordelia, yeah, you're such an idiot.
I mean, sometimes her true colors shine through, which is sad, because we like build her up so much and she does so many great things, and then this happens.
Oh,
she was worried about Gunn. She had to run, you know?
That's okay. No! You have to take the keys out of your car. Oh my gosh. Jeez. So dumb.
The bad guy for this episode. I don't, guys. I give these shows a lot of credit. Like, and I know that it was the 90s, early 2000s, but this demon was so awful. The prosthetics and the whole, like, what was even happening there? I have no idea.
He was, let's just say probably they had to split budgets for this episode in Buffy, and Buffy got all of the money to create a villain that was not used.
He looked very rubbery.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and his shoulders, like, you could just tell there was, like, some sort of thing underneath him that was, like, pushing his shoulders up, and it was so bad. Like, and even his face was really disgusting, which, I mean, is a thing that happens a lot, but I don't know. It was bad, I just have to say. Okay, so David also comes back briefly, very briefly in this episode, and Cordy seems interested in him. I mean, she sort of joked about it before, but she still has, I don't want to say an obsession, but she still notices him in a way that, like, she doesn't always notice other people, and she has a reaction to him. What do you guys think about David? Will he be sticking around? How do you feel about Cordy potentially having feelings for him?
I love David so much. I feel like if I were going to be part of, like, this angel group, that would be my role. Like, I'd come in, like, I've been excited to be there, but not really sure why I'm there. And I'm like, everything you do is so cool. Look at my cape. Does this make me fit in? And then I'd, like, rattle off some, like, really interesting and informative tax information and then go off and, like, do all this, like, heavy lifting to get you comfortable in your new digs, and then, like, that's all I can contribute.
Everyone has their role.
I get why she likes him. He's super nice and dorky and funny and really, really rich. So he's got a lot going for him.
That is true. That is true. And speaking of returning characters and whatnot, Deidre, do you recognize Green Spiky Guy, a.k.a. Lorne? They haven't said his name yet, but we kind of revealed it on the last episode. Do you remember him from your previous watches?
I do remember him, just because I remember him singing. That's what I really remembered. But, again, I don't really remember why.
Yeah,
I remember him so much.
He's very distinctive, to be fair.
Not and he has looks. To be good-looking underneath, yeah. That's what I'm saying, he has to be good-looking.
He has great, like, cheekbones. I don't know, maybe they build those up with the prosthetics, but...
So, I have, had also seen him in passing on TV, the green guy, so I knew that he was, like, on Angel eventually. But I always, when Doyle came up, I thought that he was Doyle. Like, when we saw Doyle change his face or whatever... I was like, oh, that's the green guy. Gotcha. So, now he's a new character, but I thought he was Doyle.
Yeah. What do you guys think of him? Do you like him so far? Do you think he's going to be important?
I like him. He's cute. He encourages Angel to sing.
Yes.
Yeah, I like...
For worse.
Exactly. I like that he has this ability to see, like, into people through song, like, when they're, like, revealing themselves, and I think that could be super useful going forward, maybe not just for Angel, but for other characters. Like, I'd like to see Wesley sing and see what's going on in his head and in his soul.
We kind of did already touch on this a bit, but I want to go back to Gunn and this end scene that we were talking about a little bit. Cordelia says that Gunn's biggest threat, the reason why she had a vision, is Gunn himself. So Cordy's going to help him out, and, you know, we kind of talked about that aspect of it. But what do you guys think about the idea that Gunn, you know, he feels like he cannot stop, he cannot relax, because if he relaxes, somebody's gonna die. And you can tell that, like, he's got a pretty solid crew, and they're loyal to him. But if he keeps acting the way he's acting, like, he might lose that loyalty. And I don't know if you guys are invested in Gunn's character arc or if you'd rather just kind of see him get over himself and become a part of the team and see how he interacts with the others.
I don't know. That's a good question. Everything I want to say about Gunn, I've kind of already said, so I don't want to waste time talking about him again.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I want him. I guess I do want him to get over. I want him to be more fun. He is fun sometimes, like when the line we'll talk about, Karen's line and stuff, what he inspires, that scene. And I like it when he fights with Wesley and when he's like annoyed at Cordelia. So he can be fun. I just want him to be fun more
often. Yeah, like I like that he still, like I was saying earlier, like fits into that like big brother role, especially with Cordelia, where like he's not afraid to help her out, but also like he's constantly annoyed by her presence, yet he like, you know, does what he needs to do in order to help her. So I think that was kind of fun and sort of like more of what I was hoping for in that last scene that they had together. But I think he just sort of needs to figure out or accept that he is like wanted in this group and he can lean on them for help, and maybe allowing them into his life won't be such a bad thing.
Exactly. Mitch would like to point out ship name Gundy.
Ugh, he needs to stop. Speaking of like places you need to go to rehabilitate yourself, we need to send him to like ship name camp or something. Gosh.
This is like my favorite of his ship names because most of the time they suck. And this one works.
I kind of like Gundy. Although you're not allowed. Cannot put them together for Buffy and Angel. I still... With Spuffy. Like one,
but is that one?
I like Spuffy.
Yeah, that's my one exception.
Oh, Spuffy is cute.
Deidre, you're not that confused, right? Deidre's not like a super internet heavy person, and I have to teach her a lot of things like shipping and stuff.
Oh, is it Bangel? Is that Buffy and Angel?
Yes.
Yeah.
God.
Bangel.
Bangel. Wait, I think it'd be Bangel because it's Angel.
But I like that it has Bang in it.
That might be the show title.
But yeah, usually when people use ship names, I have to think about it because sometimes it doesn't really make sense.
Right? Like you can't take the two names out depending on how. But I don't know. Gundy's good though. I like Gundy. Anyway. Moving on.
Oh, we should talk about Darla since that was like the whole episode.
Yes. So throughout the episode, we see Darla visiting Angel at night and he's dreaming about her and it's having an effect on him during the day. He's sleeping more. He's a little bit distracted and maybe even becoming weaker. So what, Brittany, what was your first thought when you saw this happening?
The, like, dream sequence?
Yeah, and the effect that Darla's having on Angel in real life.
Well, I went through the five stages of grief. I was angry. I tried to deny that it was happening, you know, and eventually I've come around to just accept that Angel has a thing for tragic blonde girls. So I like the, well, first I was really actually confused because the karaoke, I thought for some reason I missed them saying like previously on Angel, because I'm watching it and I'm like, what is going, like, why is he back here with this guy? And then I realized that, Darla was there, but then it, like, you know, once they like moved to dance and the room cleared, that was finally when I was like, oh, this is a dream sequence. I don't know why it took me so long. Not the medley of songs that he said that he sang, but the fact that they finally cleared the room was when I got the clue. I also like have a problem with Angel sleeping because I feel like he doesn't sleep. Like, is that a new thing that he sleeps? Like, I know he sleeps during the, I guess, I don't know why for some reason I thought he didn't sleep at all. Like, I know he doesn't do much during the day. Yeah, because of Twilight. I think I just get my vampire stuff confused. But I think that this is one of my favorite aspects of this episode, because I like that this is how they're bringing her into like the mix. Like, he's all of a sudden having these dreams, but we don't actually, maybe he was having dreams like this, and now Buffy, since Buffy's so far removed, they might have been about Buffy before, and now Darla's coming back into the mix, or she's manipulating it. I think it's so creepy, yet reveals this whole other side of Angel, especially when he's like, oh, like when he attacks Wesley and he's just like, you made her go away. Like, it just shows how much it's affecting him. And I think it's going to be interesting to see this play out, because, you know, I feel like we're taking a step back from Wolfram and Hart right now. And this is going to be the issue that we're focusing on, like the bigger bad.
Well, I mean, she was brought by them, so they're playing the long game here. Right?
Yeah, but it's not like, so I feel like it's more personal. Like, I guess they're playing the personal angle. I kind of forgot about them because I was just excited about Darla being back, which is a new feeling for me, because Darla annoys me so much in flashbacks. I'm like, go away.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Deidre, how do you feel about Darla? Because not everybody here is on board.
See, I liked certain aspects of Darla when she was, like, all of the previous times of her is, like, the good Darla. And any time she's been, like, on the present part of Buffy, she was awful. But I think this aspect of her is, I think, the more real her. And I do miss her, and I don't know where this is actually going, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. I am 0% surprised that you like flashback Darla. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, I pegged that right away.
That's why you're asking.
Yeah, I was like, I already know the answer to this.
I know that, like, Brittany, you hate Darla, and I know Danielle also hates Darla. I don't hate Darla at all.
Good.
And on Buffy, I felt nothing towards her. Now I like her because since Angel's the main character, I feel like she can bring a lot in terms of riling him up. And they have such a weird past. I think she'd make a great villain. But I do have a question. So obviously he's having all these wet dreams and he's getting happy in them. Is that dangerous? I feel like that is.
That's why I asked Brittany what her first reaction to all of this was, and she didn't go down that path, and I was like, well, I'm not bringing it up if she doesn't.
Well, I guess, I don't know, I feel like I don't think that in the dreamscapes he can actually get that happiness, because I feel like Darla is so, like, that's not an attainable thing for him. And is, like, I guess some sort of reality is playing into this, where, like, Buffy and his love was forbidden, and then they got together, and then they were making it work, and then he was just, like, completely happy in that moment. I don't think it's actual, like, I have a hard time. I know that they tied it to sex explicitly in Buffy, but I think there has to be a lot more going on, and I don't think that's there with Darla right now. Like, he didn't have this, like, he had this relationship with her, but right now it's like she's not physically there. He understands that it's in a dream. So maybe that's playing into it.
So that's what's preventing him from being totally happy, because he kind of knows it's not real?
Yeah.
What about the ending, though?
Well, that's the ending. I mean, that's a new thing for us to explore. I don't think if he has sex with someone, he's going to just, like, you know, turn into Angelus. I want him to, but I'm not giving up my hope that every time Angel decides to bang someone, he's, like, going to turn into Angelus. Otherwise, I'd be pushing every single character on him all the time. That's true. Also, I feel like he is probably the happiest he's ever been right now. Like, with, like, you know, when he's hanging out and joking around with Cordelia and Wesley, like, I feel like that is, like, that could be pure happiness. Like, you know, I mean, he has a lot riding on him. Like, he's probably still not over Doyle's death. He's probably still, like, he has the weight of the possibility of him becoming, you know, mortal again. And he has a lot of stuff weighing on him. But I really think that he's approaching, like, some sort of level of happiness that could be on par with what he had with Buffy, because it's just this, his, like, everything in his life is sort of lining up. And I know that romantic love should be a huge part of it, but I don't know. I feel like he's pretty well on his way to actually being happy. And that could mean that Angelus comes out to play, which is fine with me. I think that that should happen for my own sanity.
I think a lot of people would be on board with that if it happened.
Now, surprisingly, not a lot of people are as into Angelus as I am. Which is,
maybe it's the whole, like, he's evil and kills a lot of people thing.
But, I mean, no, you know, to each his own. I like Angelus. I think he's, I don't know, he's more fun to watch.
Yes. He's so much fun to watch. When he was with Drew and Spike, it was it's still my favorite moment in Buffy, and I don't think that'll ever change, because Angel was so awful on Buffy until he became Angelus, and I was like, yes. Like, it just felt like it gave David Boreanaz, like, this opportunity to flex this muscle of acting that he had to not use. And Angel's letting him do that all the time. He's hilarious on this. But that confidence and that just, he walked differently. He was just, it was so great. So great. I might rewatch that when we're tonight, just because it was so good.
I felt that coming. I was like, I kind of also want to go back and watch that. She's talking
about it. It's just so good.
It is, yeah. Okay. So let's jump into favorite scenes now. And mine was when the team's complaining about fighting those vampires, because they were all just lined up. And even Gunn got in on it, and it just felt like this camaraderie between them. They're like, oh, my back hurts, and, like, I think I broke a rib, and I can't feel my shoulder. Like, I have grease all over my new outfit. And it was just, it was a good moment to bring them together. And obviously, like, throughout the episode, the team sort of split in half, and, like, everyone's having their own issues, but it felt so real in that moment and so comfortable, and I really appreciated that.
I was going to say, you don't actually usually see them all struggling after fighting.
Right, yeah, and that was cool, too, to kind of see, like, their weakness and then having to, like, build up from that. Deidre, what was your favorite scene?
I guess it was really just with David when he came back, and he started talking about what they can do with the hotel, how they can get around things, and then how Cordelia gets warm.
I love her. She's so funny.
She is a great character.
Yeah. Brittany?
Mine was just, like, when they clearly were coming back from commercial, and there was just this, like, little scene of Angel and Wesley riding the motorcycle together, and one of them in the pink helmet, and there was just nothing came of that. Like, it instantly went right into the party. Like, it just nothing, they just had to put that in there, and it was so great and amazing.
That Angel and Wesley were the other MVPs of this episode. So their scenes, well, first of all, I do find it amusing that Angel is one of those people who sleeps in the nude, because, of course, Angel. but that whole thing with Wesley, and then Wesley making him wear the pink helmet, and it's great.
Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Cordy goes to try and save Gunn's life, and she whacks his friend on the head.
Okay, so jumping into favorite lines now, mine was basically a whole scene between the group, and Cordy starts it off by saying, when you do find him, you may want to be a little more Guy Pearce in L.A. Confidential and less Michael Madsen in Reservoir Dogs, and Gunn says, I haven't bothered to see a movie since Denzel was robbed at the Oscars for Malcolm X, which, in and of itself, like, done. Like, I was in hysterics already. But they keep going with it. And Wesley goes, that was quite a performance. And Cordy's like, I know. Talk about being wound up tight. And Wesley goes, no, I mean Denzel. Cordy, well, he is always great. Wesley to Angel, what about you? Angel, who doesn't love Denzel? it's just the way they deliver it and the way that they go so seriously back and forth between talking about Denzel and Malcolm X and, like, that they're fighting vampires and looking for a demon. And just the fact that Angel of all people, who doesn't love Denzel? Oh, so great. Wonderful scene. Deidre, what was your favorite line?
Mine was another with Cordelia. I mean, I'm just here on business. I'm a working girl. That came out wrong.
She's so awkward sometimes. Yeah. Brittany?
Mine was the first line of the episode, which I was watching the episode, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be my favorite line. And then I'm like, no, give it the whole episode. And the whole episode happened, and I was like, yeah, that's my favorite line. It was when Angel's at the karaoke club, and the karaoke guy's like, huh, Send in the Clowns and Tears of a Clown both in one night? What a treat. And Angel's like, well, I was sort of going for a, you know, medley kind of thing. And I just really want to hear him sing Send in the Clowns, because it's going to be so tragic.
I was disappointed that we didn't actually get to see this.
I know, I even watched through the credits just to make sure.
And Ariana?
My favorite line was, because you guys took all the good ones, but I like this one too. It was when Angel says, Cordy, you're driving, because that's a new season 2 development that I really like, that now he calls her Cordy. And that makes me happy.
I'm surprised that she actually got to drive it.
Yeah, I feel like Angel would be very protective.
But yeah, I'm surprised that out of all of them, he trusts her the most with it. But I like it.
I mean, I would trust Cordy over Wesley. I don't know, I feel like Wesley, like...
He rides a motorcycle.
He does. He does. That's a fair point. Okay, I might have to take that back then. Okay, yes, so that wraps up this episode. Just to remind you guys, our contact information, if you would like to send us in something, please remember to keep it spoiler-free for our newbies, or mark it with lots of spoiler tags so a superfan can check it out. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, find us on Twitter at re_watchable, hit us up on this post on hypeable.com, or reach us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, we really, really, really enjoy iTunes reviews. Deidre, have you left us an iTunes review yet?
I have not.
You should do that.
I thought about it.
You should. And you should give us 5 stars, because if you rate us 5 stars, then I will flatten a coin on the railroad tracks for you, so you can mystify and hypnotize your friends and family. How's that?
Sounds good.
Well, that
good.
Means she can hypnotize you, so I'm true. All for it.
We can hypnotize your family at Christmas.
Sounds good.
Yes. Okay, listener feedback. We just have 2 this week, and I'm going to have the newbies read them, actually. So, Brittany, you want to kick us off with this first one?
How about Ariana? Because this is to her.
Oh, was it?
Well, she's talking about
the only child. Oh, yes, yes. Sorry. Yeah. Ariana, go ahead.
From Twitter, we have Stephanie Merrill at SMERRLY. I don't know why I spelled that. Merrily. I'm sorry, Stephanie. I'm delusional. Sorry. So, early on, a newbie described Buffy as such an only child, and I laughed so hard because I knew Dawn was coming, and that was me. I said that. Yeah, that was me. I said that.
She's still such an only child.
Brittany thinks she's still such an only child. Now I don't think that she acts like an only child. I think she acts like a terrible older sister.
That's fair. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, and Brittany, would you like to get this email?
Oh, yeah. All right. So we have an email from @GN on Twitter. That's how she sends
Jenny.
Email.
Is it Jenny?
Jenny? Sure. GN. I don't know where I got GN. Jenny. Definitely Jenny. From Twitter, and she says, first, I just wanted to say I love your podcast. I have gone back and listened to your Firefly and Veronica Mars podcast only recently, and I intend to listen to the others. Good, because I wasn't on Firefly or Veronica Mars. So we'll see how much you love them after that. I'm a super fan of all the TV shows you have featured so far, except for Freaks and Geeks. the only one where I'm a super fan, where I'm a newbie and I've not seen a single episode. Second, and this is in response to Restless, I respectfully disagree with Selena around the 49:52 mark, where she says, I think this episode, being so much about the characters, I think it's pretty fair to say that if you don't like this episode and if you don't like the show so far, you're not going to like the show. I don't like this episode. I actually used to hate this episode the first and second times I watched the show, and I love and absolutely adore the show. I have backed away from disliking this episode after several rewatches. I think this is my fourth, and I do love certain moments of this episode, but I like talking about the episode better than watching it. And to Danielle's question, I would answer unequivocally that I think viewers will appreciate this episode better after they have seen all of Buffy. So thanks, Jenny, from Twitter. I actually liked the episode Restless. It wasn't my favorite episode, but I don't think that it changed how I feel about Buffy or set me one way or the other, because I think that the season 5 premiere was one of the strongest episodes of Buffy I've seen. So if I had stopped watching at Restless, I would be kind of upset that I did, because season 5's premiere was really good. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, and I think with Restless, like, we keep saying this, but it's worth repeating, like, so much of that has yet to come to fruition, and so much of it you guys just don't understand yet, and it's a lot to unpack, so it can be very confusing, but once you unpack it and you see what Joss and his team have done and will do, it's really fascinating in terms of television and how it works and how he views the show and his relationship with, you know, how many seasons he's going to have and stuff like that. And Natalie talks about this a lot in terms of, like, the arrogance of knowing, of setting something up several seasons beforehand, feeling so confident that he will have those seasons in the future to unravel those mysteries. Because television these days, even good, solid shows get canceled early, and not everyone feels as comfortable planting those things early on and waiting for them to come to fruition. Seasons are often very, like, open and shut, and maybe there's something that leads to the second season, but this, the way that Buffy works, is quite different from a lot of things that we see on television now.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that, honestly, is taking some getting used to, because I'm used to watching slow shows that burn through stories so quickly because they have to. And Buffy is definitely a long game show. Like, even Angel, like, you know, it's just everything is so drawn out, and, like, you have to wait and really pay attention.
Yeah. Hopefully it will be worth it for you guys, though. Okay, so we're going to do Brittany's Brainstorms and Ariana's Assumptions now. We've got Buffy 504 Out of My Mind and Angel 204 Untouched. And go.
Well, did you see my comment on the bottom here? Because I was on Buffy World getting quotes for this week, and I saw a picture from next week's episode for Buffy, and oh, let me tell you, I am looking forward to Out of My Mind, because damn, it's something I thought I wanted and I definitely want to happen. It's going to feature Spike. I know that because we were just talking about how Spike is not really around, and he is sort of losing it because he's attacking mannequins that look like Buffy and living out of a shopping cart in a crypt. So I think that Out of My Mind is just going to be Spike absolutely just going ballistic and not really knowing what he wants or where he fits in, and trying to deal with Harmony and her vampire gang, but also at the same time just losing it and going after Buffy, like, full blown, just being like, I'm going to kill you and I'm not leaving until I do. And it's probably just going to lead to hilarity and this really awesome picture that I saw. So.
Ariana?
I have not seen a picture, so I'm going to say Out of My Mind is going to be Buffy realizing that Dawn is a figment of her imagination.
Oh, I wish. That would be amazing.
As for Angel untouched, because we've been talking about how touching Angel makes him turn into Angelus, which is going to be him like living in angst because he can't be touched, because then he'll become totally evil, and it's going to be him being all depressed about that.
So just another episode of Angel.
Maybe if he sees everyone else around him like falling in love, and he's extra sad.
I still want, like, I know we haven't really talked about this a lot, but I still secretly just want Cordy and Wesley to get back together. Like, I just want it to happen.
I get that. I'm over them now. I'm onto the Cordy Angel train, but that's been kind of, like, derailed this season, because they don't have a lot of scenes together. So maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't need it right now. I just want it to be what happens eventually, because I just like right now, like, I really like how into David she is, but I also just kind of secretly want them to be together. And I love their scenes together where they're just hanging out, solving mysteries. They're good friends.
Awesome. Well, we'll see what happens. Deidre, how was your inaugural episode of Rewatchable? Was it everything you hoped and dreamed?
Hopefully. I don't know. It was a little weird. No, like,
such a compliment.
It's weird because, like, Deidre knows I do all of this stuff, obviously, but, like, she's never been involved with Hypeable. Like, she's met some of
you guys. Has she never been on one of your podcasts?
No.
That's so bizarre.
I've never been on one in general. Yeah.
This is her first ever podcast.
Oh, I feel really special now.
I think it's really interesting that she got the tag team of me and Adiana first, which is always an adventure.
Everyone's favorite.
Everyone's favorite combination.
It's fun, though. It's cool because, like, Brittany, you've met Deej, so.
Yes.
I have not, but Karen talks about you, like, literally every time.
She's yeah.
Like,
that's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. I apologize. But, yeah, if you listen to any of the other podcasts, and I'm ever like, my friend or my best friend. Or I just name you now.
Yeah.
I just assume everybody understands that Deidre is.
But, like, on multiple podcasts. So, like, I'm on a lot of podcasts with Karen. So I think a lot of audiences know who you are.
Oh, God. And I probably didn't even, like, meet everyone's expectations.
I mean, you know what? Our listeners are very kind. So I'm sure
we have no Gail H's here. So
there's an update on Gail H. Are you ready? Okay, yes. This is amazing.
Wait, I'm so confused.
Okay, I'll give a little brief.
Karen,
background.
Do you not listen to the episodes?
Yeah,
you're not
listen
on.
To other episodes.
I do, but like maybe I just need to trigger Adiana. Okay,
Okay, so Gail H. is a commenter on the West Wing Weekly podcast who says that she's going to stop listening to the West Wing Weekly because. Joshua Molina, one of the hosts, like, rips apart the West Wing and she feels like it's ruining her favorite show, which is a comment I've heard from a lot of people. So I related to Josh in this situation where he was like, he's like, just stop listening. If I'm ruining this show for you, you don't have to listen to us. And he responded in a very angry way. So this past week, I listened to the episode and they start up, they like play their intro music and they get there and they give like the synopsis of the episode they're going to talk about. And then, both Josh and Rishi are like, all right. So, what did you think? And he's like, oh, I loved it. This is such a great episode. He's like, I agree. Like, very refreshing. It was an excellent episode. And then at the end of every episode, they sign off by saying what's next. And so, they both said, what's next? And the outro music starts playing and it was literally like a minute long. And then all of a sudden Josh comes back on the podcast and he's like, okay, now that was an episode for Gail H. And now we'll really start the episode. It was amazing. I was in my car. I was dying. I was like, this is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. And I could not wait to come back on Rewatchable and give an update.
Oh my God. I must have missed that one episode where you guys talked about that.
Oh, it was so funny. And then, like, he was just saying, like, later on in the episode, like, way down the line, they started, like, picking apart this one scene. And he's just like, oh, we're getting too negative. And then Josh was like, it's okay. The Gail H just stopped listening, like, 40 minutes ago.
Oh,
love it.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so, but thank you, Deej, for coming on here and doing this episode with us. Maybe she'll be back.
Maybe
she hated doing this.
Maybe I didn't
she'll
hate
be
it.
Like, never again. But feel free to leave her nice comments in the,
Oh, give people your Twitter.
Unless you don't want.
No,
you don't want anything
to stop.
Okay, then never mind.
She goes on Twitter to stalk me during conventions because I don't text her enough. And then I'll just get, like, I'll be tweeting funny things and I'll get 10 notifications in a row. And I'm like, you were just checking up on me, weren't you?
That's all I use it for, or trying to figure out, like, news quicker.
Yeah.
That's the only reasons I use it, because I don't know. I just don't, I'm not funny enough to be able to do it.
She's not an internet person, which just blows my mind because I literally live on the internet, but.
I don't have time.
Okay. All right. We should probably wrap this up. yes. So thanks everybody for tuning in, and we will talk to you again next week. And until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Deidre.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Ayana.
Bye everyone.
Bye. Bye.
I want to go off mute, but there's a Santa Claus driving around my neighbor, this neighborhood, with like All I Want for Christmas blast. loud. So sorry. Oh, he's gone. He's gone. Okay. I'm like looking so out the window. Great. I'm like, what is happening? So early. Speaking of immortality, I did appreciate all of the, oh my God, Santa's back. I did. Why is he only circling this block? Don't get it. I swear, you would think that, like, the town is burning down with how loud the fire trucks are.